What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones, and as you brothers and sisters already know,
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
No, just seriously. You know, first and foremost, man, I want to thank everybody, right? And as you all know, we're on here, and it's like the Sonny from the Bronx Tale, right? You know, we talk about it. Now you just can't leave. So you're going to park your chairs. You're going to put your feet up. It's the afternoon drive. As y'all know, this is Philly Fridays. We're rocking out on Philly Fridays on Fet Life Station at FetLifeStation.com. That's FetLifeStation.com. And y'all can also catch us in podcast form at the True Stories Podcast Network. This is True Stories Podcast Network. All right, it's our new network. We're adding it to the roster. As you already know, you can catch us on Spotify, you can catch us on Apple Music, and you can catch us on a various different podcasting platforms. So we're everywhere, and where you are at right now. So it's been a beautiful week. As many of you know, we've been doing our crisis holiday food drive, our crisis holiday food drive at the Community College of Philadelphia. And for those of you who are still trying to figure out, you know, why do college students need assistance? The stereotype of college students is typically well-to-do, yuppie types, you know, students of privilege that are just hanging around. We don't have those at the Community College of Philadelphia. It's very few of our students who come from privilege. Very few of our students who come, you know, who have been led with a silver spoon. Many of our students come from your neighborhood. Some of them live on your block. And a lot of them are struggling right now. If you can only imagine being a 19 or 20 year old student, in many cases, and you know, our ages range. So we have some students that are, you know, as young as 16. We have some that are old as 80, you know, but if you can only imagine being in their shoes and what's been happening with the stagflation economy, where the prices of food have skyrocketed, the cost of living has skyrocketed, but the amount of money that's come in is, you know, it's stagnant at this point. It's losing its value. And if you want to know how much value is losing, try trading the dollar in for a British pound these days, or try trading the exchange in a dollar for a yen or a euro or a yarn. Okay. And you'll quickly see what the amount of your dollar is accustomed to. Because at one point in time, the dollar was the standard. The fiat American dollar was the standard. It's no longer the standard. Okay, it is a step behind. Y'all better understand and learn what the BRICS coalition is all about, because they're changing the global dynamic. We're no longer living in the era that's dominated by white supremacy right now. This is a proximity economic war going on right now. So pay attention globally, because what's happening globally is happening, is affecting us locally. Okay, so thankfully, the lockout is over, and hopefully people can resume getting some of their services back. We really need to talk about this whole concept of us being dependent. As I said, it's atrocious at this particular time for as a community, specifically us in the Black community, to always be in need in regards to a crisis, that we don't have our own stocks. We don't have our own houses or our own reserves and resources to take care of our communities. As I go back to the conversations we had before, talking about the epitome of the COVID crisis, and you had members in our communities begging for schools to stay open so that our children would have access to food. We have to make sure that we as a people take care of our people. Ubuntu, I am as we are. And we have to get out of the place of feeling as though we can be elitist when we're in no place to be elite. We can't be elite in our own communities when our community is struggling. And Dr. Amos Wilson famously coined the phrase, or famously identified the fact, that you could tell the progress of the community by how the worst of the community is doing. In other words, where the community bottoms out at. And our community is bottoming out at a rate in which it's presumed that our network, community-wise and family-wise, will be at zero before 2050. And you need to understand what that means. All right? When you talk about building, and we always hear talk about building community wealth, we always hear conversations about moving the needle forward. All right? We're not practicing that. We have to sort of get out of this whole notion, or this whole kind of ideology of living in our arrested development, you know, and in terms of what's important. And I often talk that, you know, as y'all know, I'm critical of the men, the women. I'm critical of everybody. Nobody gets a free pass over here. We all have work to do. There's nothing that we can sit down and party for. We always have these celebrations, these festivals and things of that nature, celebrating our culture. Meanwhile, we're stepping over homeless people in the park to get there. You know, what's that all about? So, you know, we have to, you know, parties, planning for the weekend, planning for trips. We have to be more, invested in things that build nations, foundation. That's why I identify as a Black nationalist before anything else, because I believe in what Malcolm X stood for. And Malcolm stated that, you know, we can practice the concept of Pan-African, you know, Pan-Africanism as an umbrella, but each place that Black people live in the world, Black people have to function as one people. That's what nationalism is. That's why, you know, we have so many issues with police brutality. We have so many issues with being singled out, redlining, and things of that nature. That's one of the biggest reasons, is because they know that we are divided. And a house divided cannot stand on its own. And so, you know, like I said before, a lot of y'all think, oh, you hate Black women. I love Black women. That's why I'm critical of Black women, because I believe that Black women can be the standard. Used to be the standard. You know, in terms of prestige, in terms of modesty, in terms of, you know, being the stabilizing force in the home. And so when I don't see that happen, I'm calling it out. I don't just call out the sisters. You only feel it when I call the sisters, but I call out the brothers too all the time, because I detest a weak man. And I call them out probably more so than anybody else, especially in our community, because we can't afford to. But I also acknowledge that as Black people, we have struggled. Our struggle is based on the fact that we didn't come here like everybody else. We didn't come here as immigrants leaving a land looking for better, for greener pastures, We didn't come here looking for better opportunities. We came here, many of our ancestors, I know some of you say, well, some of us are already here. Yeah, they were converted too. They were on the chopping block too by the time colonization took place in America. Many of us came here, many of our ancestors came here on the barrel of ships, in the basement, in the bottom, covered in feces and all types of stuff, because they could not leave. The last time they saw the sea was at the Cape of No Hope. And then the next time they saw the seeds, they was getting off the shores here. And they were sold on the street by the wall in New York. They were sold in Center City in Philadelphia, the place we call Liberty Square. Yeah. The North had slaves too. And all up and down the Eastern seaboard. Anywhere the 13 colonies resided. The men came here as laborers, free labor, and the women came here as breeders, with the majority of the slave breeding colonies being the place we call PG County right now. So you can only imagine the dysfunction. They're trying to bring a family out of that when you were stripped of your culture, stripped of your language, stripped of your religion and spiritual systems, stripped of your ability to communicate. All these vagrancy laws were put in place, the black codes, the slave codes were put in place. And then afterwards, policy was put in place through Jim Crow. After Reconstruction, when black people tried to build their own communities around the country, they were sabotaged, they were burnt down, they were flooded, there were highways and byways built so people weren't fraternizing them. Not to mention laws and policies. And sundown towns that still exist to this day. Yeah, we can run the gambit on why there's dysfunction in the black community. So let's not just start today. Let's go back to the roots of it all so we can sort it out. We don't put band-aids on bullet wounds and broken arms over here. With that said, we have a very special program today. And I like these programs too. More so because very rarely do we have on office hours an opportunity to interact with the people in the community that's moving things and shaking things up. So I have a very, very special couple of people to talk to on this episode of Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. All right, so let's get into it. All right, for immediate release on November 12th, 2025. And the contact, well, I'm not going to get into the context, but the Philadelphia leaders joined the NAACP to tackle health disparities. Let me turn the soundboard down just a little bit so y'all can hear what I'm saying to y'all. All right, I want y'all to hear what I'm saying to y'all. All right, in Philadelphia this Saturday coming, the NAACP Ace Your Health event series is coming to Philadelphia, where we will gather local public health leaders and preview the results of our groundbreaking. Excuse me, I gotta put something on my lips. I apologize, y'all. My lips are chapped a little bit tonight. All right, I gotta get like big and lip my lips. All right, so my apologies for groundbreaking community wellness survey to improve healthcare outcomes. All right, conducted in collaboration with when y'all come on, ladies. The NAACP has collected 23,000 responses from around the country on community wellness. That's huge, y'all. That's huge. It's a step in the right direction considering the crisis that we have in our community in all other phases. We are dealing with full spectral dominance, and that's something that we need to address because if without no health, we have no wealth. All right. Join us as we unpack insights specific to Philadelphia and turn data into clear priorities for local action. The discussion will connect opinions on neighborhood health, affordability, and an access to healthcare with real actionable solutions for policymakers and community leaders. The speakers will improve April Ryan, White House correspondent, Dr. Roger Mitchell, president of the National Medical Association, Tanisha Sullivan, head of the External Engagement and Health Equity Strategy, Sanofi. So I got to fix this. Fine. Sanofi, okay? Dr. Chris T. Purnell, director of the NAACP Center for Health Equity. Catherine Hicks, president of the Philadelphia NAACP branch. Dr. Nina Ahmad, Chair of Public Health and Human Services for the Philadelphia City Council. Dr. Palak Raval Nelson, Head Commissioner, Philadelphia Department of Public Health, Patrice Willoughby, Chief of Policy and Legislative Affairs, NAACP, Dr. Andrew Sanderson, Assistant Dean for Health and Equity, Associate Professor of Medicine at the Lewis Katz School of Medicine at Temple University. All right, that's Philly's own. Got to give it up for them. Okay, so when will this event take place? It will be here in Philadelphia on Saturday, November 15th, from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. So make sure y'all get there early, family. We cannot be on CPT. Don't show up at 11:30, 12 o'clock. Get there early. So let it be a 10 before the minute. You know what I'm saying? All right. Where? The Lewis Katz School of Medicine at Temple University. The reception is at 11 a.m. The program begins at noon. All right. So you RSVP at NAACP.org. And that's https://events/coast-coast-data-driven-solutions-health-equity. All right, wowzers. All right. If media is interested in covering this event and findings or speaking with one of the featured participants, please email China Fields. All right, and you can email her at cfields, that's C-F-E-F-I-E-L-D-S, at NAACPnet.org. That's NAACPnet.org, not .net, net.org. All right? And first and foremost, man, let's give it up, because we often talk about, you know, where are the community resources that we need from our community. So let's give it up for the work. All right. Let's give it up. Let's give it up for the work that's being done by this wonderful cohort. Hopefully, you know, we're going to get into this real quick. But first, I would like to introduce my good friend and sister for many, many years. We've worked together. We've been in the trenches, as many would say. And, you know, so that's how you could tell where a person's heart at. You could see where a person's heart at by knowing what they've been through. And when you've been through the fire with somebody, you already know what's going on. So I want to introduce my girlfriend, Dr. DeShonda Williams. What's going on, my sister? How are we doing today?
Hey, Professor. I'm doing good. I'm going here. We're burning the midnight oil.
I see. And, you know, you're a tireless worker, as a lot of people really won't appreciate how much work you do. But I don't know if you sleep. Do you sleep?
I sleep when I sleep at night. But for the most part, I try to, you know, take care of my health care and get the rest that I need and make sure things, you know, I rest my body for the work that I believe God called me to do.
That's right. And, you know, we always put God first, because, you know, without God, nothing is possible. And we're not possible without God. So everything we do, God is for it, God is behind us, and God is with us. So, you know, and I make no secret about that. I did a whole show on I'm tired of my people disrespecting God and making them look weak. So, you know, I said, my God is not meek and mild. Maybe y'all didn't check out the Old Testament. But, you know, it's a pleasure to have you here and discussing this event. So let's first of all just get a quick intro about some of the work you do, you know, outside the community. Many of the people know that I do crisis counseling work with Emir Every Murder Is Real Healing Services, but many of them don't know that who the medical director is, who is the clinical director. Excuse me. So, would you mind just sharing a teeny bit about that?
Sure. Currently, I serve as the clinical director of EMIR, Every Murder Is Real Healing Center, and been with EMIR for about 10, 11 years now, just doing the work around trauma-informed care, grief trauma counseling for families who are surviving co-victims of homicide. I think we've transitioned not just only for homicide, but for even those who are co-victims of domestic violence. and any other form of trauma that, you know, our constituents or residents or clients experience here in Philadelphia and across state lines, because we have clients that are in other states as well. So I serve in that capacity. Just been doing the work for over 20 plus years. I was just thinking about, I graduated with my master's in clinical social work in 2001. So it's been a long time doing this work in this field and just doing the work at the capacity that I've been doing it. And now, you know, times have changed and the needs have increased. And the work has tripled. And so still out here in the field.
Yeah, you know, a lot's changed. And you know what I realized too? I realized that since the pandemic, you know, prior to the pandemic, people had gotten used to going outside and finding ways to blend in and hiding their issues they were dealing with a mask. They were able to mask their social dysfunction. They were able to mask their mental wellness issues. But I think that 3 month period when people were locked away and when they were locked in with themselves, when they came back out into the world, that became unveiled very quickly. And we started seeing an increase in a lot of different things, a lot of different areas, to the point where, yeah, like you said, there's a lot of things going on. So I just want to applaud you for all the work you've been doing. And you know, just because I know that you're fully invested in the work. So, but we also have a program that's coming up, and from what I understand, you're not alone, right? You're currently the first vice president of the Philadelphia NAACP. So that's powerful right there. But you're also with the president of the NAACP Philadelphia branch, Miss Catherine Hicks. Let's give it up for Miss Catherine Hicks. Miss Catherine Hicks, how are you, ma'am?
Good, good. Hello, good evening. And again, thank you for allowing us to join you on your platform to talk about this really important event that is happening on Saturday.
Okay, so let's get into it. Let's talk about that, you know, tackling health disparities with data-driven solutions. What's that about?
Well, one thing that we want to really emphasize, that this is something that has been going on. It's coast to coast. That's why it's called a coast to coast data driven health solutions. But this is a forum that has been in the making now for, you know, almost a year, going from different cities, and now they're culminating the ending of this survey information this Saturday. So from 11 to 3, we are going to be at the Temple Klein Center. We're going to open up with a reception from 11 to 12. And then from 12 to 2, we're going to have a panel discussion with, some notables. We're going to have April Ryan, who is the White House correspondent, and she's also a political analyst on MSNBC. She's the chief for Black Press in the USA. So she's actually going to moderate this panel of really distinguished doctors who have been studying this health survey for a while. You named a lot of them at the beginning, so I'm not going to actually reiterate that. But it's really just a great opportunity for people to not only ask questions, but get informed information from the results of the survey that was distributed to over 22,000 people. And Philadelphia, we're going to break down a lot of the information that was learned from those who actually participated in it from Philadelphia. So we're really excited about the opportunity that we have to be able to share this not only with the city of Philadelphia, but our members and, of course, the community. And I'll let Dr. D actually elaborate on some of this as well, because she's been instrumental in working with this group to make sure that we were able to bring this to Philadelphia.
All righty. Okay. Well, that's Well, first of all, that's a monumental task, because I think a lot of times when we talk about subjects like this, the people are often told what they need to do, but they're rarely asked what do they need. And there's very little in terms of data collection. So the fact that you've done a survey with over 22,000 people around the country is a step in the right direction, in my opinion, because the people you talk to a lot of people, they know the issues going on. Maybe they don't understand the scope of it all, but they could tell you their anecdotal experiences and what's going on. So I think, you know, I'm glad you're able to get that level of participation. Dr. D, what more can you tell us about this event and the work that's been going on in regards to this and the NAACP's input on this particular topic?
Yeah, I think it just highlights the importance of having a conversation with people's concerns. And I look at it from the lens of embracing the reality of their context, what the issues are, considering that this is the, as Madam President said, we're the finality of it all. There were others, states and cities involved, like Texas, I think Houston was involved, D.C. was involved in this survey across the states. I think also Maryland was involved, and Chicago was involved. And so getting that information and looking at the results from state to state, seeing how some things differ, but seeing how much of it's the same. Mm-hmm. But trying to have these conversations around the concerns for the people and bringing in the experts to help provide the solutions, and or also community stakeholders. It's not just about, I mean, we listed the names of people who are at a high level of influence in our community, but we also are going to have an audience that consists of everyday people, students, stakeholders, elected officials, medical professionals, scientists, students from across different spectrums. And so having that conversation to say, we acknowledge that we have these concerns, and what is it that we can do to mitigate these concerns, and what can we do to navigate through those issues and become a different society. I don't like to say a good society or a better, because we don't want what's good for us. Good will never be good enough. We don't want what's better. Better will never be good enough. We want what's best. And so bringing the best to Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection, having that conversation and ending it here, I think is a great segue, considering we know that next year we're celebrating a great, great anniversary of our country, of our city. And so just to end it here is like a new beginning for more conversations down the road.
Well, President Higgs, did you want to add something to that?
Yeah. So one of the things that I wanted to say as well, you know, most people know the NAACP as a civic and advocacy organization. You know, of course, we are one of the oldest civil rights organizations around. We've been around since 1909. But looking at our health disparities, that is all a part of, you know, civic engagement and advocacy, because we're looking to make sure, again, that when it comes to your rights, even when you're talking about your health, is something important and is something that we need to be fighting for. I mean, in this day and age, as you see, you know, with the government shutdown and with the situation of our healthcare institutions, this is serious. You know, we have to be monitoring, but also making sure that we're taking care of ourselves and our health. Because if you're not healthy and you're not taking care of yourself, there's a lot that you won't be able to accomplish that needs to be something that is brought to the forefront. So that's another reason why I really feel that this particular health forum is so important for people to be engaged in and to make sure that they get involved and just know what is happening, not only with your bodies and with you, with your mental health or whatever, but what is offered, so that, you know, when it comes time to vote for certain things or to make sure that we are receiving what is needed in our community, this is a step in that right direction.
Okay, that's excellent. So will this be, because I noticed y'all mentioned a lot of urban centers. Was it specifically designed to, was this survey specifically designed or centered around the urban centers? Or was this more so, you know, just getting access to the national landscape as a whole as it comes to the community?
Yeah, more of the national landscape, because that's why it was done like coast to coast. And that's why, you know, they ended up, the survey was distributed to more than 22,000 people, because I think they were trying to get a broad sense of what, like, health disparities or what people are really concerned about when it comes to their health and well-being.
And was these random surveys, or was these surveys that were collected through those who had membership or subscriptions to the NAACP?
No, I mean, we did ultimately send them out to our membership, but it also we shared it with our families, the community, and we asked those who received the surveys to do the same. So it was not one of the questions on the survey did ask whether you were an NAACP member or not. So you did have the opportunity to participate even if you were not a member.
Okay. All right. So and I can't wait to see hear about the results of this survey. Now, you talk about in your press release, you talk about to improve healthcare outcomes. What does that look like? Because I understand that that could be like a broad based sort of notion, or it could be, you know, dealing with specific issues and criteria. So,
yeah. I would say more so it is definitely broad-based, because there are a number of different health issues that people are dealing with. So it's going to be broad in the sense of we'll be talking about different issues that surround us when we talk about health. So mental health is one. You know, when you talk about, you know, healthy eating, obesity, when you're talking about diabetes or some of the other things, you know, there are a number of things that we will be identifying. So it's multiracial, it's multi-ethnic, and again,
multifaceted.
It's the average, yeah, yes, multifaceted. So, you know, this survey really compares the experiences of Philadelphians to nationwide participants. So the response is going to be varied. Again, we have a breakdown, like 4% white. 4% white were lower than the national average of 11%. And I don't understand all of the breakdowns as to how they put this together, but that's one of the things that they're going to explain. And I think that's really important for us to understand, because sometimes when we hear, when they talk about certain things, advantages or disadvantages in the African-American community, there is not always a breakdown as to how that is identified. And this particular survey is going to give us that.
Well, that's good, because, you know, and I'm thinking in relevance to policy, right? A lot of the ways that the Black community in particular is dealt with is through the lens of experiments, the lens of medical research that were not conducted on Black people. And so some of the things, the medicines that are prescribed, the therapies that are described, whether it's through the DSMV, whether it's through the medical dictionary, a lot of those things don't necessarily line up with the experience of black people, the genetics of black people, even though the whole school of gynecology was based on the terrorism and the violent methods that was taken to rip black women apart, you know, unfortunately, you know, and but nowadays a lot of the studies have gone into more so fixing with the issues with Euro-Americans and not what's necessarily going on with black Americans, which is a totally different thing. I can never forget that there was a time where there was an Ebola outbreak in Africa. I forget what country. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Ghana. And they gave the serum that they had come up with to three people. And two of the people recovered well. But the one brother who was a black brother, that brother practically melted in his own skin. So the serum had no effect because they didn't do the clinical research based in his genetics and so forth. So, you know, I think that's a good, my heater just turned on in the background. So apologize for the background noise.
No problem. But you know what? You have a point there because, you know, historically, you know, black African-Americans and blacks, you know, we were very untrusting when it came to any type of, you know, studies or testing, you know, because in the past, of course, you know, we had been used as guinea pigs for experiments that were, you know, really devastating to our bodies and our well-being. So, you know, we have just started, you know, in the last, you know, I guess, century or whatever, allowing ourselves to trust enough to do these different tests and surveys. So I know, again, that's why this is so important, because we need to make sure that we do know what's going on. And of course, in post COVID, that's a whole nother reason why we need to know what's going on with our bodies. What are some of the things that are working, and what are some of the things that are adverse to even making sure that that we live a healthy life.
Oh, absolutely. And we also need to know that we have a voice, and not only a voice, but that voice carries some weight with it, some authority with it in regards to how we're going to be treated. So many years that we've been told what we're supposed to do and what we're supposed to take, or how we're supposed to, you know, function and perform without having any say in the matter. And you're right. You know, you can go back. I mean, many people know about the Tuskegee experiment, but a lot of people don't know about the lead experiments that took place, you know, right in urban centers such as Philadelphia and New York, where they had, you know, input lead gasoline into super highways that drove through black neighborhoods. And during rush hour, whether it's morning rush hour, evening rush hour, they saturated the airwaves and led to a toxic lead outbreak that was blamed on lead paint, which actually was also used in many of the public housing projects and that housed a lot of our people. So there was a lot of things. I mean, you can, you know, and there's great reason for us not to trust any of it, because they still are uncovering ways of deception in regards to the medical industry. So I think it's about time that we sort of like took the lead and took the initiative on, you know, taking care of us and what's in our best interest. So so will you guys be talking about policy, or will this more so be information based and just informing people of what's going on?
It's going to be both, because policy will be a part of it too. And I'll let Dr. Deed elaborate on that a little bit.
I think it's organic. I think, you know, in any type of setting like this, there's a forum, you have your set questions. And I think oftentimes it becomes very organic post your visits of what the questions would be. We're not at liberty of those questions at this time, but we do understand that it's going to be organic conversation based upon the data that was revealed, some of which Madam President shared tonight, as you know, she said as well, is like just getting into it in depth. That's why we have the experts that's going to be at the table. of the conversation. But then we also have the lived experiences that's in the room through the audience that will share their take on that. And I'm sure questions of policy will emerge, because, as I said before, we have some elected officials there that will be in presence there, and we will have some community stakeholders, some community advocates who are forerunners around policy and decision making, and just advocating for, as we call it, the least, the last, the lost, and the left behind. So, yeah.
Okay, that's good. That's good. It's good to see. Well, I mean, this is all kind of like groundbreaking. I mean, there's been discussions about mental wellness, or just wellness in period. Is actually one of the areas that I have been indulging in a long time, specifically, you know, at the Community College of Philadelphia, where I currently work. So one of the areas that we talk about is, we talk about traditional meds. We also talk about non-traditional, medications and holistic ways of dealing with health. So are y'all going to be including that, or this specifically dealing with the medical professionals at this particular time?
I think it's the medical professionals providing an expertise around the data that was collected, and the data, the conversations around the results of what Philadelphia's response was, what was Pennsylvania's response to that, of what was the responses from the other states that participated in this year-long survey. So it's really about that. And so those questions and concerns will definitely emerge during the conversation, but it's really about, look what the data presented from the survey. And going back to the context of, these are the conversations that we're having with your concerns that you said in the survey. These are the disparities that you face and or that you've seen in your community where you live, or and or you know somebody who's in that particular area that has some type of disparity. So based upon how the questions were asked of us through the survey and what came a result of that is what's centering around the conversations that's going to be had on Saturday.
Okay. Miss President, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah. And I think if there are certain questions that may not be in the, purview of what the survey addressed, that's something that they will answer, but then also probably take it a step further as to, this may be an additional portion of something that we may address later on. So there will be a question and answer portion. So I think whatever comes up, they will be either addressing or letting them know, how we will move forward on getting them those answers.
Okay. I think, that's good. So y'all have an opportunity for people to sort of there's going to be info box or a place where people can place questions, get feedback and things of that nature.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. So I have another question. It's not necessarily related to the event, but it's more so related to, rebuilding and reestablishing the NAACP's relationship with the Black community. Over the years, ever since, I guess, the end of the Civil Rights Movement, it's been, pretty much assumed that there's a certain segment of the community that the NAACP appeals to, and is not necessarily the common person that's walking up and down the street, but more so those of stature and class. And that would be considered upper middle class in the middle in the Black community. Have you first of all, what do you think about that stigma? And has there been any sort of agenda to sort of reach back to the roots of the NAACP, the Brown versus Board of Education version of the NAACP, and so forth. We understand that a lot of people just see it and then they don't really know what the NAACP stands for right now, and they're trying to find it. So how do you get it back into the community where the community sort of been uprooted by a lot of these organizations like Black Lives Matter and some of the other ones that have sort of been in the limelight and the spotlight over the last few years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would say I disagree only from the sense of how the people that we connect with, because we are community based. Mm-hmm. So those who are members of the Philadelphia branch, they come from all walks of life. And, you know, we have a large senior membership, which, you know, that most of them, you know, they were boots on the ground, you know, in the 60s, the 50s and 60s, and they're still a part. But what I will say is, because we have these other organizations like, of course, Black Lives Matter, the Urban League, you know, we have expanded, you know, Coalition of 100 Black Women, which is wonderful, because at one time it was mainly just the NAACP. But we need all these additional voices. What I will say is that what we need to do with these voices is make sure that we're all coming together. You know, for me and the way that I was raised, you know, every African-American person or Black person should be a card-carrying NAACP member, and mainly because of the shoulders we stand on and what we had to go through to get to where we are today. So there are people that will say, you know, what is the NAACP doing now? We're still doing the advocacy work. We're still doing the work that is, you know, was put before us, you know, in the era of Brown Board versus Brown, or Brown versus the Board. That hasn't stopped. We have changed some of the ways that we do things. It's not all just about picketing in the streets and, you know, making loud noises and different things. You know, it is advocating and actually, you know, working with legislators, working with our committee people, working with our neighborhoods. And one of the things that we are doing is building our base back up. The Philadelphia branch is working on building again, like our community, but building our membership, because strength is in numbers. And when you have those numbers, when you have those people that when you call to order something, when you call have a call to action, and you have those people that are behind you, you know, working with you on making sure that those initiatives are looked at, heard, and addressed. That's where we know that we're doing the right thing, and that's what we're sticking to. You know, some people don't know that, you know, we do our general membership meeting every third Tuesday of the month. We have one coming up this Tuesday, November the 18th. And during that meeting, we address a lot of the things that we're doing in the community, what we are doing out of our office, which we have a branch office located at 4458B Germantown Avenue. We're in that office right now. normally we're not here this late, but today we're getting ready for this forum on Saturday. We just had some extra work to be doing But our office is open 3 days out of the week: Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Monday and Fridays we are open by appointment. And Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays, we're here from 11 to 3. And this is all volunteers who come in to make sure that when, you know, someone has an issue, if they call, if they come into the office, that we're addressing those issues. The Philadelphia branch consists of about 15 committees, you know, including an education committee, health committee, which Dr. DeSanda actually heads. We have political action. We have a criminal justice. We have a prison committee. All these committees, you know, they work with the community. We have a legal redress where, you know, if people have issues and need information about an attorney or information on their rights, their civil rights, we handle that. So it's a lot that the NAACP is still doing. And we just, you know, it's about spreading the word. But people have to get involved. I think what I will say is a lot of us have become complacent over the years because things were made easy for us. We didn't have to fight anymore for a while. But now that's what it's coming back to. You know, things are going backwards where, you know, before it was our, you know, forefathers and grandmothers and grandfathers who were out there on the picket lines and out there, you know, fighting for our rights. And once we got the rights, we sort of got a little complacent. And now it's time to raise our voices again and really be, you know, vigilant with what we need as a community and what we need to do for our people, because it's us that are going to save us, nobody else.
Exactly. Well, first of all, thank you for that. And I know that Dr. D personally has she's boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, when those houses exploded in Nicetown a few months ago, she was there. And not only was she there, she was advocating strongly for those people. I'm talking about the Red Cross had some answering to do because they weren't moving and mobilizing the right way. And she made sure that they got some resources for those people that not only were in the homes and not only the ones that, you know, that lost their lives or related to those who lost their lives, but also for the three blocks that were affected by that explosion. So, I mean, we walked those blocks and we saw the calamity that took place, and the people around there were just shaking. You know, they were without power for days in the middle of the summer. And I saw her work diligently for that, make sure those people had food, reached out to different city councilmen's or council person's offices and out the city, and had them react and respond. So I know that she's boots on the ground. So that's a strong what I'm saying, endorsement for what you just said in regards to getting back to boots on the ground.
And Dr. DeShonda, she was one of a few of our committees that actually did some things. It was our health committee, our education committee actually donated, you know, some clothes, some other things, but also our membership, which is our second vice president, Donnell Martin. He also was boots on the ground there. You know, I met with some of the city council members in, you know, talking to them about what was needed and what needed to be done. And we mobilized. I mean, you know, a number of our committees worked together, and some of them did things separately with their various committees to make sure that they were able to donate, be there for those who were impacted and those who were, you know, housed at the Steele School at that time. So we're very proud to say that we were very instrumental in being there. And that's not the only tragedy that has happened in Philadelphia that the Philadelphia branch NAACP was, you know, boots on the ground right there. We don't always, you know, publicize everything or put it out, but we have members that are in numerous committees and work along with their blocks, their neighborhoods, their council people. And, you know, you don't even know that a lot of times they are a part of the NAACP and they are actually representing the NAACP, but we get the job done.
No, that's
as the young people say, Carl, we outside.
Yeah, we outside. All right. All right. Well, and I'm glad to hear that. I think maybe, and, you know, just every once in a while, though, people need to know the work you do, because the perception is reality, unfortunately, for a lot of people. And a lot of other faces go out there on the we get stuff done, you know, with the we get stuff done stamp on, you know, especially when there's collaboration. I know where I work at, it's all about who can take credit for what work was done. Unfortunately, a lot of work doesn't get done by just the merit. So, but I'm glad.
I want to say this though, Carl. You know, respectfully, that when Madam President got into office as the first, we have to say that the first female president of this branch. So we want to give kudos to her for that, because it was totally led by men. And so her lead, under her leadership, the, one of the things that she wanted to really lead and spearhead is that visibility, and knowing that there was those narratives about, is the Philadelphia NAACP, not just Philadelphia branch, but NAACP period, visible? Are we outside? Are we doing the work? And she always advocated from day one that we need that visibility. We need to let the people know. Hence why in early September, we had a community event where people came out and families were serviced and community members were provided a slew of great things from people in the community and from and through the NAACP. And the fact that if you can come twice a year, we have children, students, college students, young people here at this office advocating for the importance of voting and being registered to vote. And just, so she's always talked about that visibility. And so that's why it's important that we have people come and join us, come work with us, and come connect with us. Because with those three variables, we can get that exposure that we need, like you, giving us this opportunity to be on this platform for people to hear us, not just in Pennsylvania, but in New York City, because we know that one of the great leaders of the New York City NAACP, Ms. Hazel Dukes, who recently transitioned, she's one of the amazing pioneers of the NAACP. So to have some New York listeners hearing us tonight, they can say, well, they know what they've done in New York. Well, we want them to know what we're doing in Philadelphia. And so,
y'all being heard more than just in New York. No, this is international internet radio.
I know, that's right. Yes, thank you.
You're being heard, and yes, you and it's and like you see, you come to the office hours. So, we're definitely going to get the word out in terms of the work you've been doing. And the work you continue to do, I applaud you for all of those things, because, it's really a Herculean task that very, as we often say, it's hard, it's thankless, but at the same time, we don't do it for that reward. Our reward is the work itself in many cases. Dr. D and I, we helped transform a whole culture at what was identified as an alternative behavior, alternative school that the children affectionately named Central East Prison. It was Community Education Partners here in North Philly. And we helped change the culture of the entire network, not just Philadelphia, but nationally, in regards to turn it into more academic based rather than reform based. And a lot of our students not only got to celebrate a prom, they got to celebrate a graduation, which was not part of the program when we started. And in addition to that, many of our HBCU tours, and they also went to college, so we changed a lot of outcomes. Students who had no hope coming in ended understanding that they had the world at their feet. And I like to thank my sister DeShonda Williams, Dr. DeShonda Williams, for a lot of the work she did and just being instrumental behind it. People understand our work day ended at 5 o'clock. She'd be there till 9, 10 o'clock at night. She closed the building a lot of times, working by the scene, doing things and gathering resources, going to students' houses, making sure that they had what they need, talking to their parents, and working around the clock. So we had a lot of a lot of memories from those times. So yeah. I know who
that's beautiful. Yeah. And see, that's again another testament as to why Dr. DeShonda is our first vice president. Because again, it was passion in her heart to be a part of the NAACP, but this also, you know, is a platform, mm-hmm. you know, for her to be able to, you know, get navigate in different areas and avenues and advocate for those rights, for just what you were saying.
And I have to be totally transparent and honest here. I remember the day that Madam President had her opening day here at the office. I was literally down the street at my church. We were giving away free book bags and all that stuff to the community. And I walked up here, and it was so surreal because I was so excited that we had this new president, and she was a female. And I was like, I came straight up to her. I was like, listen, I'm joining NAACP because of you. Like, you, like, just hearing this, the excitement and the buzz around this woman taking the leadership on such an historic organization. And we know for real, that this organization was led and built by women. Yes. And so we want to, you know, historically keep that in context. But for Philadelphia to just, you know, have Madam President here, I was excited. So I have to be honest, like, transparent, like, I came. I was like, I came because of you. I'm joining the NAACP. So
thank you.
That was exciting for me, and it still is, to know that, you know, that was something we needed. We needed that new life. We needed something different. And we wanted to continue. We want to continue that legacy.
Well, thank you. Yep. Yeah, I mean, and it wasn't easy because there was a lot that we had to overcome and a lot of challenges that the Philadelphia branch was going through at that time. So, you know, it has taken a little bit of time. You know, we have gone through some things, but we are moving forward. We are transitioning into, you know, making sure that this branch is going to be one that is definitely remembered as a pioneering branch. So, you know, again, we really thank you for allowing us to have this time on your platform.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, anytime. And one of the things that, you know, and I got to dropping bombs in here today. So, and congratulations, Madam President, on, and hopefully that will be a very successful, run as the president of the Philadelphia NAACP, and keeping things in terms of, and moving forward and reestablishing its place in the community. So that a lot of people can have access to, you know, the things that are right there in front of them, but they just can't see it because they don't know it's there a lot of times. So, I'm glad that you are all working on that visibility piece. And I'm really glad about the event. So one more time, because we're now in overtime, right? So one more time, tell the people, about the event and where you're going to be at this Saturday and, how they can get involved.
All right, so we are going to be at 3500 North Broad Street at the Lewis Katz School of Medicine, which is the Temple University Medical Education Research Building, room 105. We will open up our doors at 11 a.m. for our meet and greet reception, and then at 12 o'clock p.m. sharp, we will start our panel from coast to coast, data-driven solutions for health equity, which is powered and sponsored by Sanofi and the NAACP, with a plethora, a menu of really great experts, people who are leaders in the medical field, health field, social activism, and policy making. So, and they can RSVP at naacp.org/events/events at naacp.org/events. It's not too late to register. There is no fee. It is free. Please come by and bring someone with you so that we can see you in the room. And we would love to hear you say that you heard us tonight on Professor Jones' podcast. You just might win a prize.
Office hours. Y'all better get it right. Office hours. All right. Y'all heard it here first. And for those of y'all who are like, wait a minute, what? Yeah, we do the pre-recording in the evenings, y'all. We do the pre-recordings in the evening. So you will get this. early enough, I promise you. And it'll be distributed on all platforms by 2 p.m. Eastern time, Eastern Standard Time. So, and for those of you who are members of our podcast network, you know, the True Stories Radio Podcast Network, you will actually get access to it tonight. So, you know, you gotta, you know, where's some of my sound effects here? Where they? Hold on. I got some sound effects here. I got you. So, y'all get it tonight, baby. Y'all get it right away. Y'all get it right now. So, you know, y'all ain't got to play. We don't play no games. All right. So all I want right. to thank you, lovely ladies, for spending your time, your evening with me on Office Hours, Professor Carl Tone Jones. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in. And as y'all know, man, I always ask y'all, I always say, take care of yourselves. All right. Y'all know me personally. I've shared my trials and tribulations even recently, you know, with my current bouts with health and making sure that I prioritize health. So, you know, I already know this is a very important topic for us. So make sure that you, you know, come out on Saturday, tomorrow, Saturday. All right. At 11 a.m., 3500 North Broad Street. Make sure y'all pull up. And from what I understand, I got turkey sausage, turkey bacon, and all that good stuff. So, you know, for those of you who don't eat pork, I'm just joking. But they probably do. Anyway, so as I always say, war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And with that, I am out of here.